Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. This is a program this week about something that did not happen. Amazon did not choose South Florida for its second headquarters, the so-called HQ2. It's an enormous project, promising as many as 50,000 jobs over the next 15 years, paying an average of $100,000 a year. It also brings with it up to $5 billion in spending by the company on buildings and equipment, but it will not happen in South Florida. 14 months after first very publicly announcing the project, setting off a race across three countries to attract the deal, Amazon decided to split it between New York City and Arlington, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. The company also announced a similar deal in Nashville for a new operations center. It's expected to be an incubator of sorts for Amazon's supply chain. Now, Amazon's decision was accompanied by congratulations for the winners and criticism over the use of incentives to attract one of the world's most valuable companies run by the world's richest human being. If Amazon creates the required number of jobs paying high enough salaries, it's in line to receive more than $1.5 billion in state incentives in New York. It could qualify for additional benefits if it goes beyond the initial job creation goals, and there may be more New York City property tax incentives that could kick in. And the company also may get favorable treatment for rezoning the land in Queens where it wants to build. In Virginia, Amazon hopes to create enough high-paying jobs to get over $500 million in state economic development incentives. The city of Arlington, Virginia, also promised to pay Amazon over $20 million from local hotel taxes. As part of the package to attract Amazon to Virginia, the state said it would spend $1 billion over the next two decades to build the Virginia Tech Innovation Campus to help supply technology workers. And access to tech talent was cited by Amazon for it choosing these locations. But the size of the public incentives raises questions about what other areas were offering to bring Amazon to town. Some, like the state of Georgia, released their offers. But many, like South Florida, have kept the details of what they were offering Amazon secret. Late last week, 2 days after Amazon announced its decision, we sat down with the leaders of the three South Florida countywide economic development agencies, the Beacon Council in Miami-Dade, the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance from Broward County, and the Palm Beach Business Development Board. The trio collaborated on South Florida's effort to bring Amazon to the region, and the effort that was secret by Amazon's making, and by the agency's making, too. When South Florida was included in the top 20 finalists, Amazon required the agencies to sign non-disclosure agreements, keeping any information the company shared with the groups secret and keeping any data the groups shared with the company secret. The three South Florida economic development agencies say they also signed secrecy agreements with the state economic development group, Enterprise Florida, and they required more than 50 local groups they worked with in developing the Amazon bid to sign their own secrecy agreements. So we don't know yet specifics about what South Florida offered Amazon, but we do know what types of public incentives are commonly used in Florida for economic development. The state has three primary incentive programs. The most significant is what's called the Qualified Target Industry Tax Refund, or the QTI. Hypothetically, that could have added up to over $500 million in incentives. This is Beacon Council CEO Mike Finney, who led the South Florida effort to bring Amazon to the region.
Yeah, the QTI was definitely included. In fact, one of the things I'm positive that we'll be able to do is to provide a list of the types of incentives that were included in the package, even if we can't be specific.
So let me ask about the QTI, because there are specifics related to Enterprise Florida, which is the statewide entity that has the QTI and the statewide economic development agency. The QTI starts at a $3,000 tax refund per qualified full-time equivalent job, right? Mm-hmm. And then it can go up $1,000 more if it's at a certain salary level, or another $1,000 more if it's even above that salary level. And then there's further incentives that could add several $1,000s more. All in, it could be upwards of $10,000 per job as a tax incentive. My back of the envelope math puts that at 50,000 jobs over 20 years, $500 million in potential tax incentive for Amazon. Is that in the ballpark?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, using that calculation, the QTI was in fact included. I will defer until we complete our analysis and conversations on offering a specific number. But I'd say your logic is sound with respect to the QTI and the mechanics of how it works when considering a project. Obviously, the more investment, the more jobs, the higher paying the jobs, all those things are factors that the state would look at. But what I will say is that the state did not consider any kind of special incentive above and beyond what is statutorily available. So the QTI, as an example, we know is available, and you just described the mechanics of how it works, and that's how we would have applied it in this case to try and arrive at a number that made sense for this project. But again, I'll reserve on putting that exact number out there until we have a chance to speak with Enterprise Florida in this case.
Were there the same number of commas in the number that I mentioned, the number that you're talking about? I'm going to do my best, Mike.
Yeah, I I'll reserve the commas for a later conversation as well.
Another incentive I imagine was part of this bid was the capital investment tax credit. Was that part of the bid as well?
That is correct.
This is an annual tax credit that goes against state corporate income taxes in Florida for up to 20 years. The minimum here is 100 jobs, $25 million in capital costs. This project easily would have met that threshold. This includes buying and building real estate, installing an equipment, workforce equipment, those kinds of things. So I imagine this was a few $100 million of potential tax incentives based upon Amazon expected to spend $5 billion in capital spending over the lifetime of this HQ2 project.
Well, yeah, so that is another one of the incentives that would be listed as part of the consideration that we included in the proposal. Yeah, I mean, we looked at every incentive that was available at the state and local level because we knew that our ability to get a big special incentive like New York did in Washington or Alexandria, Virginia. New Jersey was probably most outrageous at a $7 billion.
Yeah, Maryland legislature passed $6.5 billion in special incentives.
Right, right. And we just knew that wasn't in the cards here. So we looked at all the statutory opportunities that were available to us, and we included those in the proposal. And again, we're, you know, based on the outcome of the conversations that we're having, we should be able to provide a little bit more information than I can right now.
But why the reluctance to even talk about this, the range of incentives, of these publicly available incentives? The formulas that I just went over are publicly available online. I didn't have any special access to this.
Right.
And I'm just doing back of the envelope math based upon what Amazon
right.
said it wanted in September.
Right. No, I'm acknowledging that your logic in terms of looking at those incentives and the process by which you calculate those incentives align very nicely with this project based on the investment, jobs created, and the compensation that'll be paid to all the workers.
And does it align with the bid that Amazon was weighing from South Florida?
I'd say the criteria you outlined are the same criteria we walked through in order to put together a proposal for Amazon. And we did it in concert with Enterprise Florida. We didn't do it in a vacuum.
And to protect the taxpayers of Florida, I mean, these are all performance-based incentives as well.
This is Bob Swindell, CEO of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, the economic development agency in Broward County. These types of incentives in Florida are paid only if certain job creation, pay, and investment criteria are met.
It's a pretty transparent process. I mean, you can go out there and do your own calculations. I mean, that's not a big secret, and we don't withhold that from public disclosure. I think our state is probably one of the more open states when it comes to the different programs that are out there. But, you know, here's the crux. I mean, look at the conversation we're having right now. We're focused just on incentives. I would argue that our tax structure in Florida is one of the best incentives that's out there. It doesn't have an expiration date on it. You know, how do you calculate, you know, your employees, your, you know, especially your highly compensated employees, not having to worry about a personal income tax? I mean, those are really, you know, qualitative advantages that Florida has to offer. And we lose sight of that sometimes. And I think it's really important that companies calculate that into their formula. We've got a well-run state fiscally. I mean, we've got no pension obligations that are unfunded. A lot of the states that we're talking, you know, $6-7 billion. They have reasons they've got to offer that kind of money up front to compete with a state like Florida. They have those unfunded obligations that they've got to figure out. We've run our state, you know, consistently in a strong fiscal way, and I think businesses like that. It's predictable. They can plan their business around a very stable governmental environment that Florida has to offer. I don't see that changing anytime soon. So, you know, that really is a huge advantage, and we talk about that a lot, but we can't lose sight of that. We, you know, when we talk about these incentive programs, one of the reasons that Florida doesn't have to offer $5 or $6 billion is because we've got, you know, a lot to offer in so many other ways.
Did you just give me a number that was not part of the package, Bob?
No.
The South Florida Economic Development Agencies that worked to get Amazon to come to the region won't talk specifics about what they offered the company, and it's difficult to even estimate the range of what public incentives may have been. But it's likely to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars based on formulas the state sets forth for job creation and pay thresholds. In addition, there are millions of dollars in local public incentives depending upon the county and the location of any possible development. So still to come, with so much public money potentially in play, why all the secrecy, even after losing out on the bid?
There's a few reasons to potentially not release it, but we're going to do our best to share as much as we can.
I'm very uncomfortable showing our hand to our competing communities that we compete with on a regular basis around the country.
It's hard to release the specifics because they never really got to the level of negotiation of a particular piece of property.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. In January, 20 areas around the country learned they were finalists in the race to be home to what Amazon calls its second headquarters. Originally, 238 areas in the United States, Canada, and Mexico submitted initial offers based on what Amazon said it publicly wanted. Those included an area of more than a million people, the ability to attract workers, and within 45 minutes of an international airport. Miami-Dade's Economic Development Agency, the Beacon Council, took the lead in putting together the regional response to what Amazon wanted. And in doing so, CEO Mike Finney says they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA in business speak. South Florida's other county economic development groups, the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance from Broward County and the Palm Beach Business Development Board, also signed secrecy deals, as had more than 50 regional partners the groups worked with to put together South Florida's package to Amazon. We spoke with the Regional Economic Development Agency leaders last week, 2 days after Amazon announced it chose to split its second headquarters between New York City and Arlington, Virginia. They expect to release more details of South Florida's unsuccessful offers, but not yet. No details yet. Kelly Smallridge with Palm Beach's Business Development Board, Bob Swindell with the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, and Mike Finney with the Beacon Council defended the secrecy surrounding the process.
We put together a competitive incentive package, but to a great degree, it's dependent on, it would have been dependent on the site that was selected. So, for example, we had sites in Homestead and Doral and Miami and Broward and Palm Beach. And so some of those sites were privately owned, some were publicly owned. And to a great degree, the incentive package is dependent on which sites would have been selected. And since none got selected, it's difficult to then just simply put a number on what a potential incentive package would be. So it's a difficult process to do an apples and apples comparison. The other thing that we have going on right now is because we signed a little over 50 NDAs, we're now going through a process literally today, tomorrow, and for the next couple of few days to really walk through each one of those NDAs to understand if those individuals who partner with us are comfortable with us releasing data about their organization, if it's their organization.
We have seen other unsuccessful bids for Amazon become public. Atlanta, for instance, through the state of Georgia, released all of the data on the bid. Do you anticipate making that kind of release, Mike? If so, when? If not, why not? What's making you reluctant or unable to provide that kind of transparency?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, the data that was assembled, the information that was assembled in the packet is a representation of South Florida and of this community that I think all of us should have access to because it really arms us with the information we need to effectively tell the story. Having said that, we just need to work our way through these NDAs to confirm that we're not going to get ourselves cross-eyed with someone when there's no need to.
Well, give us a sense of what you think, what's the proprietary data here?
So we had both public and private land that was included in the proposal. Those private landowners and or building owners may or may not want the data we included in the proposal available to everyone. They understood that it was being assembled in private. And so, we don't want to get out ahead of them in presenting it to the public.
And what kind of data was this? Square footage, valuation, improvements?
It was extremely detailed with respect to the site and all of the conditions that would have been necessary to develop on the site. I mean, just a lot of detailed site information about utilities that are either there or are in process. So a lot of detail. Under normal circumstances, you would think it's the kind of information that any business would want to be out there. And that's what we expect to get as feedback. But until we go through this process, which we've already started, of reaching out to every one of the organizations, we just don't want to get ourselves ahead of the process. A lot of the information that we gathered, it's clearly stuff that's available in the public domain, quality of living features and things like that about this region. That kind of stuff we feel very comfortable with. But anything that's specific to a business or a community, that even incentives, those are things that ultimately would have required approvals by governmental entities. And it's for them to say if that's appropriate to release. It also stands the risk of putting us at a competitive disadvantage down the road if others know where this community stands on major projects. So there's a few reasons to potentially not release it, but we're going to do our best to share as much as we can.
Bob, the biggest curiosity is likely around incentives because those are public dollars. So why not release, I suppose, the incentive information while you're still working through some of this private detailed information?
Well, I to be honest with you, Tom, I think it is a big part of the proprietary process.
Obviously, the incentives?
Yeah, if you have a winning incentive package and the taxpayers are funding that as they would have to, definitely would share that information with taxpayers. But until you actually go through the process and do the vetting and go through the actual approvals, I'm very uncomfortable showing our hand to our competing communities that we compete with on a regular basis around the country. I think, you know, that information, it doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve our taxpayers in the long run. So I think it's important that, that we keep as much information that has a competitive disadvantage if it's released. We keep that private.
So, Kelly, why do you think groups like Atlanta and Georgia did release their full bids to Amazon if the three of you presumably agree that that is a competitive advantage to keep that kind of information private?
If my county had made an offer to Amazon and went through the approvals as my counterparts, that would have to be public information because it's government. The three of us are private economic development boards that are trying to facilitate projects like this, of which much of the incentive conversation, as Bob mentioned, would have to have gone through some formal processes should Amazon, or if Amazon were to progress to, would have progressed to more serious levels. So while we, in my particular case, conceptually agreed on what types of programs could have been offered, the actual voting on of numbers and the formalities had not taken place because our conversations never elevated to that level.
Couldn't it be a competitive advantage to have the bid public, to have some of these specific programs and the kind of offers that are available for large corporations out in the open?
The types of programs are already public. I mean, companies that are creating jobs, for the most part, in our three counties.
Sure. So I guess why not release then the specifics that Amazon was looking at?
Well, for us in Palm Beach County, it was hard. It's hard to release the specifics because they never really got to the level of negotiation of a particular piece of property in our county. So I couldn't throw out a number to you today.
Well, yeah, and the same would be true here in Miami-Dade. I mean, the reality is because there were both private and public sites involved and varying degrees of opportunities on those, it's very difficult to tie down a number. It really is a pretty wide range with respect to what the incentives might have been.
Could you give us an idea of what that range was?
Right. Well, I think the right answer, though, at least today, is that we're committed to reviewing it. And just like we're going to review it with all the private partners, we're going to review it with the governmental entities that were involved, just to make sure that we all are on the same page with respect to what we're releasing.
Other thing I would add as well is, these proposals are very project specific. Sometimes when the when information gets out there in the ether and a company says, well, you know, I'm going to create 500 jobs, I'd like 1% of the package you put together for Amazon, it doesn't necessarily work that way. You know, we look at the cumulative impact a project has, but each project has its own unique merits and drivers. And as Mike stated, you know, we had private incentives were a part of this conversation as well. So when you look at combination of public and private land, you know, a lot of these incentives, you know, were based on this specific project, the scale of this project. Obviously, the high-wage jobs are a big part of the conversation. We also look at capital investment, the impact it's having on the local tax base. So all those things cumulatively come together, and you want to make a proposal that represents and defends our taxpayers and is a good investment that they'll see a return on that investment. So we take that responsibility really seriously. You know, I don't want prospective companies feeling like they're not getting a same level of care and interest that we would provide something like an Amazon HQ2 because they might not get the same level of incentives. There's a lot that goes into that calculation.
Talking with Bob Swindell of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, Mike Finney of the Beacon Council, and Kelly Smallridge of the Palm Beach Business Development Board. The three joined forces in hopes of attracting Amazon to bring its second headquarters to the region, an effort that we learned last week was unsuccessful. Amazon instead chose New York City and Arlington, Virginia. Still to come, how the tech talent measured up necessary for a project like Amazon's.
Our traditional economic development models and our approaches to recruitment and retaining have shifted considerably to now looking at how we portray talent in our region.
It's, you know, how do we fill those gaps we've identified?
We now understand how this community can grow to meet the demand of other tech companies.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting Public Radio. Last week, when Amazon announced where it would build what it calls its HQ2, it chose two cities, both of which already have sizable technology workforces, New York City and suburban Washington, D.C. While there is plenty of curiosity around tax incentives used to help lure Amazon to those regions, in announcing its decision, Amazon instead focused on the local job markets. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos said, quote, "These two locations will allow us to attract world-class talent," end quote. The company said attracting top talent was the leading driver. Even before Amazon narrowed down its list of finalists to 20, though, the Wall Street Journal did not include Miami in its analysis of likely locations. Two of the cities the Journal cited as having the best access to tech talent were New York and Washington, D.C. Just a few weeks before the official announcement was made, one online betting site had Miami with the longest odds of winning, 8,500-1. We spoke about the talent race and what the Amazon experience indicates for South Florida with Kelly Smallridge, CEO of the Palm Beach Business Development Board, Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance CEO Bob Swindell, and Miami-Dade's Beacon Council CEO Mike Finney.
The issue of talent is almost always number one when it comes to site location decisions by companies, and that's been in my experience. It's been rare that they came in and asked for anything other than an assessment of talent. In this case, I think we're all convinced that had they selected Miami-Dade, our ability to attract talent is really second to none. I mean, this is an amazing place, but we also know that they're looking at the talent that exists in the community right now. So what's there right now? And, of course, we had done some preliminary work even during the process. Looking at, you know, 238 communities was hard. But when it got narrowed to 20, we took a closer look at those that we were handicapping as being most likely. And as it turns out, the Washington, D.C. Metro, Boston, Atlanta, Dallas, New York City, those were some that were coming right to the top. So we did a quick analysis to see where we stood relative to those others in terms of those key talent criteria that you mentioned. And you know, as it turns out, you know, the Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach MSA has about 100,000 technical jobs of the type they described, give or take.
MSA is Metropolitan Statistical Area, kind of
that
incorporates all of South Florida, the three big counties.
That
at
is
least.
Correct. Yeah. That is correct. So about a little over 100,000 or so. New York, New Jersey, almost 600,000, 550,000. And then the Washington, D.C., Alexandria, Virginia MSA, about 400,000. And so I guess if you just look at the existing talent that's there right now, The other two are significantly higher than us, about four or five times as what we have. Their decision process is not something we're privy to. We just simply know the outcome.
And the outcome was to select those two locations, Queens, New York, and suburban Washington, D.C. Kelly, how about the talent issue? Mike talked about the current number of technology workers in South Florida being a fraction of what they are in the two cities that ultimately attracted Amazon. But this is a project that has promised upwards of 50,000 jobs over a 15 or 20-year time period.
Right. So I think, speaking from an economic development leadership position, all three of us would agree that our traditional economic development models and our approaches to recruitment and retaining have shifted considerably to now looking at how we portray talent in our region. And the same numbers that Mike is throwing out regarding the amount of technology talent are the same numbers that I present for Palm Beach County, because remember, now we're all presenting this area not as just one county. We're presenting it as a region, and it's such a tight labor market. The same steps that they're going to have to take or would have had to take here in Miami, they're going to have to take in the two areas that they selected. All of us are experiencing less than 4% unemployment. Much of their talent can be hired locally, but they're also going to have to bring in talent from the outside, even in the areas where they are. And that's where I really thought that Miami and our region would have presented a really strong case, in that I think that South Florida is such an attractive place for bringing people in and for recruiting due to our high quality of life and this attraction to millennials. I thought that we would score very high in that area and recruiting talent and relocating employees and younger people has always been a plus for us.
Bob, certainly the literal weather conditions of South Florida are unbeatable, certainly this time of year and for the next several months as they relate to Arlington, Virginia, or Queens, New York. But building the kind of second or third headquarters that Amazon wants to in these locations, with the kind of number of jobs that they want and the kinds of jobs, building from just a much bigger base, bigger pool, existing pool in those locations compared to the number of existing employees here, it really puts a disadvantage for South Florida, doesn't it?
Well, it's, we've got the reality of the numbers we've got right now. And I think, as Mike mentioned, they were looking at the existing population, what that workforce looked like. But they were, really clear in the fact that, they're going to be adding these jobs over, as you said, 15, 20 years. We've got 6 million people in South Florida. We could accommodate that kind of growth. I think our university presidents and college presidents and their participation in this process did a great job of laying out how they could create the talent pipeline for these key computer science and engineering jobs that Amazon was looking to fill.
How do you begin to address, though, that differential of the existing pool?
It's a huge part of what the three of us work on a regular basis with our academic leaders. It's, how do we fill those gaps we've identified? Each of us have, our organization has gone through a skills gap analysis to quantify where is the gap and how do we fill that. So I think, that's the work we're doing now. I mean, we've added a full-time education manager at the Alliance because it is such a focal part of what we do. We find a very receptive audience with, the president of Florida Atlantic University, the president of Nova Southeastern University. They're all very attuned to what, they want to hear from us. They want to know, what does industry need? And let's develop a talent that will meet those needs.
Mike and Kelly, does the shortcoming that Amazon perhaps used in making its decision not to locate in South Florida in terms of the existing pool of technology workers, does that change how either of you go about trying to address that deficit?
To Bob's point, we are working on this on a continuous basis. And our academic leaders across the three communities came together, partnered with us on developing some proposals that made sense for the growth that a company like Amazon is anticipating. What's beautiful about that is that they were going to consume the equivalent of 50,000 jobs that would be a combination of technical and others. We now understand how this community can grow to meet the demand of other tech companies that might be looking for 500, 1,000, or a few thousand jobs as opposed to one that's looking for 50,000. We now understand from an academic standpoint, from K through 12 all the way through to our universities, what it's going to take to feed that type of pipeline. And now our challenge is to make sure that we're reaching those audiences of business leaders who are engaged in the tech disciplines that are looking to expand locations and where South Florida would be attractive. We're still looking for other opportunities, and we fully expect that the level of recognition that we got from this effort, and plus what we intend to do going forward in terms of marketing and promotion of this region to tech-based companies, is likely to bear some fruit.
Mike Finney speaking there. He leads the economic development agency in Miami-Dade County called the Beacon Council. Our conversation with him and Bob Swindell with the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance and Kelly Smallridge with the Palm Beach Business Development Board continues. Still to come, what lessons did the trio learn from working together in hopes of bringing Amazon to the region? And how could it change how they go after future deals?
We are very focused on telling those stories on a national and international basis in some of the tech hotbeds where Miami simply didn't play in the past.
I have changed the way that we sell Palm Beach County, because when CEOs come here, they don't see county lines.
It's getting us on more short lists than I think we would normally see.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Today, we're talking about South Florida's unsuccessful bid to bring Amazon's HQ2 to the region. A year ago, when the company put out its request for a proposal, among the 238 locations submitted bids were four areas in Florida: Orlando, Tampa, Sarasota, and South Florida. South Florida was the only region in the state to make Amazon's shortlist. Ultimately, it was unsuccessful. Amazon chose New York City and Arlington, Virginia. Still, the regional economic development agencies characterized the effort as a success for, if anything, forging a cross-county border proposal in the effort to bring a giant jobs creator to the area. Back to our conversation now with Bob Swindell of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, Mike Finney with the Beacon Council, and Kelly Smallridge with the Palm Beach Business Development Board.
This probably was the first time in about 10, maybe 15 years that we collectively put together a solid bargaining proposal for South Florida. We see this as probably the most successful initiative that we as a region have ever participated in, and while we did not win the site, this is only going to serve as positive reinforcement for the three of us to sharpen our pencils and work even more. There's a lot of number crunching, and there was a lot of analysis that went on from a statistical standpoint, but we certainly can dive a lot deeper to find even better data points and more data points that properly represent our area.
What are the pools of that data that you want to explore further?
There are a lot of technology people that work within companies. I visited Cancer Treatment Centers of America and Office Depot. Neither of them are really technology companies, but the amount of technology people that they have working within their companies, and those stories go on throughout our region, and we need to be able to pull that data out. Understanding our millennial population a lot more.
What types of questions do you have around the millennial generation? This is the generation that is just entering or relatively young in their careers.
How many actually stay in our area? I know when it came to Palm Beach County, while we could properly churn out the number of graduates that are coming out of our respective private and public universities, I want to get a better handle on the amount that actually stay in our region.
And Tom, I think that millennial population is really important to our ability to sell companies on locating here. They should be playing an active role in this process. We had some of that through this project.
They meaning the millennial population?
The millennial population.
Yes.
We did have some involved, but not nearly enough versus us who have a little bit of gray hair. By way of example, the Amazon team that visited, I think about half the team that came, there were nine of them, during the site visit, I think about half of them were millennials. So,
were they asking different types of questions than you and Bob, you and Kelly and you are used to fielding from advanced teams from corporations looking to build or to grow here?
They were asking the same kind of questions that the rest of us would ask. They want to understand about quality of living, cost of housing, entertainment options that they had beyond work. Some did want to understand education options, what's available beyond the undergraduate degree they may already have or the graduate degree they may already have. What kind of research is going on in the community in some of the technology areas? Those are the kind of things that came up. We took a quick trip to Wynwood. They had heard about it, wanted to see it, and the only place they took pictures was in Wynwood Walls. They wanted to be in the photos from Wynwood Walls, as an example.
Bob, your experiences and lessons learned here.
The current talent is really looking to where they want to live before they find the job, which is, 180 degrees different than when I was in college. You got a job with Procter & Gamble. You didn't care where they sent you. You could have gone to Peoria, and you were happy because you were with Procter & Gamble.
I grew up a couple hours away from Peoria. Nothing
wrong
with the Midwest. I have
great friends from Peoria. It's a beautiful place. Nothing wrong with Peoria. My point being is if the real dynamic now is that I'm going to decide where I want to live, and then I'll find the job when I get there, talent is the first part of the conversation, whether you're a technology company. And every company has a technology aspect. I mean, is Chewy a pet food company or are they a technology company? I would say that they're a technology company that happens to distribute pet food. But you look at Celebrity Cruise Lines, they have a huge technology division. All of our cruise lines do, whether it's point of service. So when you begin to look at and you peel back, are they a technology company or are they a cruise line? Technology has a huge impact on their business. I think attracting that talent is going to be really important moving forward. And if it's as mobile as we think it is, it's important that we craft a marketing message to those individuals as well, saying that, South Florida is a great destination.
So I suppose the follow-up question then is, how does the marketing message of what the three of you do for a living to try to market this geography to corporate America and global corporations, as well as local corporations to invest in and grow, how does that change as a result of your experiences here?
If you think about the visibility that South Florida received, the company's got the largest access, to the most significant data stockpile in the world is, I would arguably say, is Amazon. When they did their evaluation and looked at communities across this country and said that the only location in Florida that they felt would be a good location for their second headquarters was South Florida. And then the interest that spurred from that, because people handicapped South Florida. They were surprised that we were even, part of that top 20. And we had a lot of, I had folks asking me, well, tell me why. What persuasive things are happening in South Florida that we're not aware of?
How'd you answer that?
Pretty much talked about what we've talked about. The talent that's here, the desirability of this community. A lot of the conversation with Amazon was around tolerance and diversity, whether it's gay and lesbian employees, how they're going to feel comfortable in your community. South Florida is really a very welcoming community. We're talking to companies now from the Northeast that are looking at South Florida. I don't know if Amazon was the one reason, but if you think about, the multiple touches and just the conversation around the Amazon search process, it's definitely raised the visibility and the interest in South Florida. So it's getting us on more short lists than I think we would normally see. Great, outcome from this effort. Well, we didn't win. I think ultimately, as Kelly said, we came away winners.
Tom, I was going to say kind of my two big lessons learned. Number one, this idea of collaboration, this whole marketing question centers around that. But it's collaboration on a couple fronts. First and foremost, it is at the level of the three communities. And we've talked a little bit about that. But even within the communities, we ended up working with more than 120 individuals across the three communities in order to develop the full proposal. And then secondly, this idea of marketing the region that you raise is something that we need to get on steroids. We know that we are not doing enough to tell Miami-Dade story, and I trust my friends in Broward and Palm Beach probably feel as if they could do more as well. And so we've started that, right? We are now redirecting a lot of our resources toward national and international audiences of business people, business leaders that are in these key sectors that we think make sense for this region, whether it's trade and logistics, banking and finance, or even travel and tourism for that matter. These are all key industries for Miami-Dade. And we are very focused on telling those stories on a national and international basis in some of the tech hotbeds where Miami simply didn't play in the past.
Kelly, for you, how does the Amazon experience change how you do what you do, or does it?
My pitch has changed dramatically. When I'm pitching Palm Beach County's numbers, I then quickly pivot to a regional perspective. I'm making the shift right now to change that from our digital media to from our website and all of our print material is now going to tell a South Florida message in addition to the Palm Beach County numbers.
So it hadn't done that in the past, huh, Kelly?
No, I did not. I have changed the way that we sell Palm Beach County, because when CEOs come here, they don't see county lines. You know, when I travel into Fort Lauderdale on 95 or then into Miami like I did last night, there's no pop-up sign that says, whoa, this is Miami. Everybody sees it as just one big region, and they're looking at it saying, wow, that talent pipeline has really opened up. I was thinking from Boca to Jupiter, but now I'm looking at Jupiter to Miami.
Bob and Mike, is that the same for both of you?
I would say for us, it's a little bit different, and this is probably where we become a little bit more selfish in our efforts to represent our communities. You know, Miami has an international brand that I think is just important to put out there, and so we want to make sure that we're doing that. But what's behind Miami? It's Fort Lauderdale, it's Palm Beach, and it's all the wonderful assets that exist in their community as well. And so we always represent it as a total package of what's available in South Florida. But we also try and lead with the marketing term of Miami because it has an international flair to it.
It has been rumored that perhaps Miami could be in a place, or South Florida in a place, for a Latin American headquarters if Amazon so chooses to try to grow its business in that hemisphere.
This project was really about HQ2, and it really did not involve, you know, other opportunities that may be there. But what we know from this work is that companies who are clearly in a growth mode are going to grow somewhere. And while this project was announced and it's clear it's a major project, we also think there may be other opportunities down the road, and we want to make sure that we continue to position this region based on its strengths. And certainly Latin America is one of the strengths that we have literally in many multiples versus any place else in the United States.
As it relates to Amazon, was there a communication back and forth that led you to believe there's interest on the part of Amazon in regards to that?
Yeah, during our communications, it was really all about HQ2. We didn't try and concede that we could only handle a Latin American headquarters as an example. We felt it was important for us to continue to position ourselves for HQ2. And we felt it was most important that if for some reason we were not successful, we'd then begin approaching this customer like we do every other one, is to stay in touch and make sure we're understanding when other opportunities exist. And if Latin America is one of those opportunities, we want to be there ready, willing, and able. We don't want to pigeonhole ourselves so that they'd only consider us when it's Latin America. If they decided to build a tech center centered around trade and logistics, why not here in Miami? Or bank and financial services, why not here in Miami? So we're trying to make sure that we keep all the options on the table while staying connected to the client.
That was Mike Finney, who leads the Economic Development Agency in Miami-Dade County, the Beacon Council. We also spoke with Bob Swindell of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance and Kelly Smallridge of the Palm Beach Business Development Board. Now, still to come, balancing the desire to win a giant jobs project like Amazon's second headquarters with the reality of today's affordability challenges here in South Florida.
I think a project like this, there would definitely have been an upward pressure on wages.
It represents an opportunity for us to continue to build a middle class here.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. When Miami made Amazon's shortlist of finalists for its second headquarters, there was some excitement about how that could jumpstart South Florida's ambitions to be seen as a global business center, not just as a jumping-off point into South America. But also there were concerns about what the influx of the high-paying jobs promised by Amazon would mean for a region that already experiences one of the biggest income disparities in the nation and is one of the least affordable housing markets based on average incomes. Back now to our conversation with Mike Finney, the CEO of the Beacon Council, the economic development agency in Miami-Dade County, and his counterpart in Broward, Bob Swindell of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance.
Did South Florida kind of dodge a bit of a bullet that could have exacerbated the affordability challenges that the economy, that our regional economy is wrestling with today?
No. You know, the company, to their credit, was very sensitive to the impact that they would have on South Florida. I think, you know, when you look at their experience in Seattle, They didn't want to repeat that. I think a project like this, you know, my business members will probably kill me when I say this, but there would definitely been an upward pressure on wages. My technology companies are already complaining because of the new companies that are coming into Broward County and they're having to compete on a wage basis. That's a good thing. I don't think we ever want to be known as a low-cost employment state. I think we want to be able to tout that we've got the talent here. That talent should be compensated like similar talent in other parts of the country. We're not an inexpensive place to live, so you factor that in. But clearly, I'm a big believer that wages are a clear indication of the benefit that someone brings to a company and what their contribution to that company is going to be. So creating artificial levels is not helpful in a business environment, but people are compensated in comparison to what they can deliver for value to a business. And that would have been an impact for us. But I think at the end of the day, once we would adapt as a business community and what those wage pressures would be, our community in South Florida would have been much further ahead, and it would have ultimately been a positive. Yes, there would have definitely been pain points along the way, but I think those are our pain points that we should be prepared to deal with. And we are a highly desirable location. I think more and more people are going to live here. Retaining our talent is vitally important to me. But if someone can get a job in Austin that pays 20% more and the cost of living is 10% less, I'd be hard-pressed to tell somebody, well, no, stay here where you grew up in South Florida. You know, forget about that financial advantage. So I think, you know, as we mature, that's going to be part of the formulation moving forward. And at the end of the day, that's going to be a good thing for South Florida.
Yeah, I would generally agree. It represents an opportunity for us to continue to build a middle class here. As you look at this community, it's clear that there's wealth. I mean, you look at all the new residential units that's going in. Most of those are high-end residential. There's not a lot of workforce and affordable housing going in. So clearly, there are people with the means to afford that housing. But there's also a lot of folks who are desperately looking for housing that is workforce and affordable. And if you continue to grow high-value jobs in this region, those high-value jobs really serve to create opportunities to build a middle class. And the fact that it was not going to just happen organically, it was really going to happen in a planned way, because they talked about the next 15 to 20 years, it gives us a lot of time as a region to really plan for it. We did not see any evidence that this would be a major drain on the community. We thought it would represent an economic improvement, especially with respect to the middle class.
Mike Finney is CEO at the Beacon Council, and Bob Swindell is the boss at the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, the economic development agencies in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. They work together with the Palm Beach Business Development Board on the ultimately unsuccessful effort to attract Amazon's second headquarters to South Florida. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at WLRN. Look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Uribe is our technical director. Polly Landis, our booking producer. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening.